Speak from Mark chapter 16, verses 1 to 5, a testimony to the resurrection. It says, "Now when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of Jesus, and Salome brought spices that they might come and anoint him. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. And they said among themselves, 'Who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb for us?' But when they looked up, they saw the stone had been rolled away, for it was very large. And on entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, 'Don't be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He's risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him.'" Now this story starts with Mary, and Salome. They're taking spices to Jesus. They're taking spices because what they did was, they're not for mummification, but the spices they actually used were to prevent the bodies from smelling so much. Now, why is this even important? Well, you know what? These three ladies were going to the tomb with no expectation that it would be empty. For them, their Saviour had died. Their Jesus hung on that cross, and they watched. They watched the brutality of it. They watched how their hope was stripped away. They'd given in to despair, darkness and emptiness. Because they thought, he was with us. He was with us, but now he's gone. Now all I can see is the problems that are around me. The despair that pushes in. The thing I almost can't breathe. And they turned up, and it says it's very early in the morning because they couldn't go any earlier. I wonder if on the way to that tomb they were crying. Their hearts being so heavy that they were going to anoint the one that was supposed to save them. That they were going to anoint the one that would set them free. I mean, can you imagine how the disciples felt? They didn't want to go down there. They denied Jesus. They'd fled like cowards. When the going got tough, they just ran away. But these three ladies, devoted followers of Jesus, they head down to the tomb. And they ask the question, who will roll the stone away? Because again, they're not expecting it. They're not expecting resurrection. They're expecting to rock up and this huge big stone will be put across the doorway. And they can't move it. It's too big. Let alone the fact that there were soldiers in front of the thing. So even if they want to move it, have you ever seen what a soldier looks like? They've got a whole heap of stuff strapped to themselves with pointy ends on them, don't they? And if you're trying to push a rock, they're going to pointy end you before you can get the rock out of the way. True? So it wasn't in their best interest to get down there. The women are not going to be able to move the rock because they'll get pointy ended as well by the soldiers. The soldiers don't want to move the rock because that's not what they're there for. The soldiers are just there to make sure that nobody steals or disturbs the tomb. So it's not in their best interest because they could die from that. Their responsibility was to keep that sucker sealed and whole. And so the women come down, not expecting it. I mean, Matthew 27 talks about the guards that were set around. But they come and they see that the stone has been rolled away. What do you think would have been going through their mind? I think it would be, wow, stone's not there. Who did that? What's going on? Because they had all their spices to anoint him. They go up to the tomb and they look inside. I wonder if there was a nervousness when they looked. What would they see? What would they find? when they peer through that opening? Could it? Would it? Would it? Would it be the whispers? Would it be the thing that he heard? They heard him say. And they look inside the tomb, and he's not there. Nobody's excited about that. I am. Okay, I am. Because this dirty big rock is out of the way. The guards aren't guarding. They're not poking anyone with pointy things. And Jesus is not even in there. There's a young guy in there. An angel in there that speaks to them. Actually tells them that he's risen from the dead. Oh my gosh. Why was it ladies that he said it to, do you think? That's a story for another day. I got a theory on that one. But these ladies are told he's risen. He is risen. Why? Have you ever thought of this one? Why was the stone rolled away? Because like in John 20, there's a story about Jesus who appears in a locked room without opening the door. So Jesus can get through a wall. Can't he get through the side of a tomb? Why is the tomb open? See, we think the tomb was closed to keep Jesus in. I don't think the tomb was open so people could look in. So people could actually look and know beyond a shadow of a doubt, my king is risen. He's not in here anymore. It's John 20. I mean, if he can walk through the wall, it wasn't to keep him in. The fact that it was open and these women saw, and it was open for everyone to see, to say, he's not here anymore. He who was crucified, he's risen. And you know what? The time that he was dead was the time that they thought maybe the spirit would mill around for a little while and then leave. So it removed all doubt that he was dead. Okay, we're not talking clear, back again. We're talking dead, starting to decompose and to smell. This is 3 days. So we're not talking about a resuscitation. We're talking about a resurrection. We're talking about coming from death to life. Anybody experience that? Not this week? Perhaps the Hills, the seniors? Maybe? Just checking. No, they're good people. They've seen a lot in their life, believe me. They're amazing people. But could you imagine that? Seeing somebody risen? Not resuscitated, but resurrected. And you know the interesting thing today? He's still risen. He's still just as risen today as he was in that tomb. Still just as risen, and it still flows on out of this. The power still flows. I mean, it says Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified. Do you know when they say Jesus of Nazareth, it really means like Neil of Gundawindi or something like that, because Nazareth wasn't a flash place. So when they said Jesus of Nazareth, it was actually almost a term of, oh, Jesus of Nazareth. But he turns around and he takes this term and makes it something of honor. That he is Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Whew. See, the women had seen the place where they laid him. And Spurgeon actually says, for those of you who don't know Spurgeon, he was an amazing preacher, just incredible communicator. He says, these women were later grateful that the angel told them to see the place where they laid him. It should have been enough to merely hear the testimony. Nevertheless, when they saw it, it gave them ground to stand on even more solid than the testimony of an angel. One eyewitness is better than 20 ear witnesses. Men will believe what you have seen if they do not believe what you have heard. These women had seen it with their own eyes. They went and shared. And we know that when we see that the place where they laid him is now empty, we see that God did not forsake him. Do you remember on the cross Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? His resurrection proved that he didn't. His resurrection proved that he did not do that. The fact that it's empty, we see beyond a shadow of a doubt that death is now conquered. It has no power. If Jesus beat it, wow, then that's something that is just phenomenal. And we also see that we have a living friend in Jesus. Our God is alive, interacting with us, talking with us. I mean, the resurrection means that Jesus was declared to be the Son of God. Whew, come on. Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it means we've got full assurance of our own faith. We believe that Jesus died and rose again. Whew. The resurrection means that Jesus has a continuing ministry. That means if he's still alive, he's still on the go. He's still doing what he always did. It means that Christianity and our God are different to every other religion on the face of the earth. Because our King is still alive. Our King actually wants to have something to do with us. That in our pain, in our hurt, in our trouble, he leans down and lifts us up. Have you ever noticed that? Every other religion that man comes up with says you must measure up. You must be this before you'll be loved. But our God leant down and said, I will identify with you. I will identify with all of your pain, all of your hurt, and I will lift you. Man, what a God. What a God. And the fact that he died on the cross as a sinless man, as a sacrifice to bear the guilt of our sin. See, the death of Jesus on the cross was the payment and the resurrection was the receipt. And he said, it is finished. No more needs to be paid. You're free. Goes on to say in verses 7 and 8, but go tell his disciples and Peter. Did you notice that? Go tell his disciples and Peter. How'd you like to be the add-on? It's kind of like, come and hang around with us. Oh, and bring Neil as well. So, yeah, it's been a hard one. That he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him, as he said to you. So they went quickly and fled from the tomb. They were trembled and they were amazed, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. See, go and tell. These women get a message from Jesus. I think it would have been the coolest thing to be the ones trusted with the message that he has risen. To go and tell these guys that were supposedly disciples, that were supposedly followers, that weren't even at the tomb, he is risen. They get this amazing message, this amazing invitation. You know, when we look at an open tomb, I think it's an invitation for us tonight. I think it's an invitation because the open tomb, I don't know whether you noticed, but invitations of Jesus, they're always filled with grace. When he says, come to me, he doesn't say, fix your life, then come. He says, come and let's journey together. I will not condemn you for where you've been, but instead I invite you into a journey. The invitations of Jesus, they're always fulfilled on his part. He always fulfills the promises. He said to the disciples, I will meet you in Galilee. And he did it. He says to you tonight, I will meet you tonight. He invites us because he wants to reveal himself to us. Do you know God isn't hiding? He's not playing some weird hide and seek game. His desire is so strong for you and for you to be whole. To take you and make you into someone you were always supposed to be. Someone who can stand tall, filled with the very presence of God. Confident in who you are, in him. And Jesus, his invites me, he always remembers his promises. If you read the Bible, the promises of God are phenomenal. Talks about giving you a future and a hope, a destiny, something beyond the here and now, something that goes on beyond the point of death. I mean, I think it's amazing that when he says, go tell the disciples and Peter. Because when Jesus died, the disciples ran like a pack of cowards. And Peter denied his Lord over and over again. And these were the people that were closest to him. These were the ones that were the dearest to him, that he spent the most time with. And they rejected him. They turned their back on him. But the first people the angel tells is to go to my disciples and to Peter. I wonder if Peter would have said, I don't consider myself one of the disciples because what I did was too bad. You don't understand what I did when I said, I don't even know him. I'm not one of his disciples. I don't even like the guy. I don't know him. And yet this invitation goes out to who we would see as the worst of the worst. The ones that in the hour of perceived need and suffering, they ran. But instead, Jesus turns around and says, I have a special hope for you. I have a forgiveness for you. I have a restoration for you. See, we can always say, we've done too much. We could never turn back. He could never understand how broken I am or what I've done. Do you know what? He knows. And the open tomb is the open invite to you tonight. Now Spurgeon again, he said, if any of you have behaved worse to your master than others, you are very peculiar called to come to him now. You have grieved him and you have been grieving because you've grieved him. You have been brought to repentance after having slidden away. And now he seals your pardon by inviting him to yourself. Our God is the God of the brokenhearted. He's the God of the one that have turned their back. He's the God who can restore anyone, no matter what you're in, and bring hope. What will it take to get you to the place of the invite tonight? Because he says it doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter how broken you are. It doesn't matter that no one else knows. He says, because I do. He said, I know your innermost thoughts and I love you. I know your dreams and I love you. I know your problems and I love you. You will never walk alone again. Do you know he gives us this invitation? And it's so, so easy to respond. Some people try to make it so hard, but it's not. You know, God said to me one day, he goes, you just admit it. You've done stuff wrong. You've run life your own way. Believe that I died on a cross and rose again to restore relationship. And then choose to live for me for the rest of your days. I want to invite us to pray through that prayer tonight. If you've never responded to faith tonight, this is your night to respond to the open invite. Your night to say yes, Jesus. And you know what? If you've journeyed for 50 years, 40 years, 20 years, 10 years, this might be your night to say, God, I want to look at that open invite again. Give me a revelation of the open tomb, the resurrected Jesus Christ.